A Woman, a Lake Spirit, and a Skull, Part 3, 35 Minutes.
I think the Garden of Eden is, again, the role of the serpent is obscured a little bit. I think the serpent is, again, this phallic principle that's penetrating into the...
discrimination.
Yeah, causing discrimination and setting everything in motion. So I think the serpent is functioning phallically, but in the myth it's been modified in such a way that you don't necessarily understand exactly what the serpent is doing in the story.
So things have to get worse before they get better.
Yes, absolutely.
Is that true in our psyche? What does that mean for us, you know, as we explore?
Somebody else addressed that, you know. In what sense do things have to get difficult before we become conscious?
Well, isn't that what individuation's all about?
How do you mean?
Well, that's part of the journey.
You have to have trouble before you stop thinking. If you don't have any trouble, you don't wake up. If you don't have hardship, you don't learn. You can't grow without hardship. You know, if kids are too well looked after in every way and coddled in every way, they can't mature. Actually causes injury if you look after too well.
I can think of a practical example might be marriage. My first 2 years were like really tough.
Yeah, and that's really tough. And that's really true. I mean, one of the things about marriage is it requires people to struggle through the difficulties. That's the marriage vows say it explicitly, for better and for worse, in sickness and in health, which doesn't just mean physical, it means an emotional strife. You know, just struggle and struggle. That's how people, gives people another opportunity to grow. So,
it's struggling and learning, right? Incorporating those knowledge. It's not just suffering. Suffering doesn't feel to be.
Yeah. Same thing that Jung did with the psychic break. He had
in tremendous pain and difficulty for years, I think, in his own active imagination. Some people argue that he was crazy. He managed to pull himself out of it, but that he went through real semi-psychotic process. So let's see, what else can we ask about this?
I'm thinking about the first story we read, where the, where I forget the first story, the names of everybody, but it seems if you tell me your dream, and then I'll tell you my dream.
The island of the serpent?
The island of the serpent. And it's kind of like, you know, you're in the Garden of Eden, everything is really pleasant. And then God says, do whatever you want, but don't eat from that tree. It's almost like he's motioning to them to eat from that tree, because then you'll share my consciousness. Because if I'm God, I know everything. And I understand, because I'm the very consciousness of the creation or whatever. So if you eat from that tree, then you're going to share in my consciousness, and you're going to know what I go through on your human scale, which is then all this kind of, what you have to evolve and struggle and blah, 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 and no matter what happens, because you're in charge of this consciousness or this creative whatever that you're living, then it's kind of an identification. Like you said, there's this huge force, right, is overlooking over you, which is maybe your unconscious trying to direct you, so that you actually share the God spirit and the responsibility that God has, or that you will have if you share in that same, if you take on that role or that, that mission or that...
The challenge, right?
Challenge. Sorry.
Beautiful. Absolutely.
I just thought of that, how awful it is. It's like a cruel kind of responsibility to live life. It's like so frightening and at the same time risky, and then you're expected to overcome everything on top of it all, right? Whatever interactions.
I think that's very nicely said. It's really, and it really is true, God really pointed that. That's the tree. Don't eat it.
Right. Wouldn't have pointed there if he didn't want you to be tempted. But then who's the tempter? Is it the serpent or is it God?
Well, he put it there. I found the fable. God put it there, right? Because it says creation.
It's
but that goes to the whole thing about choice. You know, you have to... I'm not sure if I believe in God or not. I'm not sure. But one of the things they say is, you know, why there's wars and stuff is we have volition. We have a choice.
I think it would be reasonable to think of God and the serpent as really both aspects of the same thing. The unconscious.
On the continuum.
Yeah. Yeah, because the devil was a fallen angel. I mean, I think the devil was one of the angels closest to God on God's right hand. And he fell. I'm a little hazy about that.
Mm-hmm. No, that's what happened.
Yeah.
At least according to what I read. Wasn't actually there when it happened.
So now,
but
now,
it also is the serpent gets blamed, you know, and women get blamed, you know, a lot for original sin. Oh, it's because of Eve. It's like, well, Ed made the apple too. You know, I think that the consciousness, the pointing out of consciousness is really the... When you're aware, wow, then you have to make different choices. It makes you... I know I always get, like, very annoyed. I'm responsible for this now. Now that I'm aware of it, not to be responsible for it. There's a responsibility that comes with consciousness that is, you know, in these... the underlying thing of the story here, and not so much the first one, but the later ones, where she's now they're responsible.
Let's ask a different question. What do you think it means that the parents kill the penis? Because, I mean, this is going along fine. She has her leg penis and she's enjoying that. Everything's working out fine. But then the parents come along and kill it. So, psychologically, what's that about?
Well, interesting is that they sound the same song that she did. So they enter into the same kind of ritual that she did to get connected, this unconscious, and then they kill it. So they knew how to.
Psychologically, what do you think it means that apparently in this journey it was required that the penis get cut off, killed?
Well, that's what Big Brother's job is, right? Big Brother. You know, societal pressures and norms and... Now, you can look at it, I'm no expert, but in the Middle East and, you know, women and the repression, you know, that's if a woman goes towards, you know, takes off the veil or whatever, there's a tremendous backlash of killing people.
Yeah, what were you going to say?
I was thinking that maybe it's because it's still in the realm of the... it's becoming conscious, but it's still, like, it's not something concrete that she needs to, I don't know, like, I'm thinking that maybe something more, it's still something from the lake, it's not that something that she can
marry.
Yeah, well, yeah.
It's not from
the... Yeah, it's not from the real world.
You can't
yes.
just marry this penis in the lake. I think you're right.
Parties.
You could bring it to parties, but people don't know you had it. That's how you heard it.
In the box, right?
Well, that's the other story. This is, you know...
But it's repeated, see, in the story of Hina and the eel. The eel's head was cut off.
Right.
At one point. And even in the story of the trickster's penis, the ends are bitten off by the chipmunks.
Yes.
So, and then they become cultural resources. So I think you're right, you're absolutely right, and you're onto it. It's about transformation. Her initial relationship with phallic energy is still relatively unconscious. You know, it's a relatively unconscious engagement that she has. There is an engagement between yin and yang. She is having a connection to the masculine, but it's strictly at the sexual level, if you like, or at an unconscious level. Mm. So then the parents come along and put an end to that, and force the story forward. And then the story continues, and what does she find next?
Skull.
So you see, if you think of the chakras, we're moving up from the pelvic chakra to the head chakra. So there's a movement to a different level of experience of the. So what about a skull? Or is it symbolically?
The dead person.
But stay with the image. It's not the whole person.
Dead person's head.
Consciousness.
No brain. Head. It's the shell.
Don't be shy.
The carapace.
Now you're being very literal.
Very literal. Well, it's skull.
There's a place for that, right?
Yeah.
Actually, you're right, but we have to be careful. We have to be a little tricky here. It's the shape,
because you can't tell from a skull if it's a boy or a girl.
Well, that's true. It's the head.
CSI.
DNA maybe, but like looking at the skull, you know, usually it's like a boy or girl.
Yeah, but the head is the place for thinking, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's thinking, but there's something dead about. So I think you have to think of it that way. It represents thinking, but it also represents death. So what are we saying now? The woman has gone from the relationship with the penis. Now she has married or is in relationship with thinking, but there's something dead about it.
Buried, unconscious.
Okay, still unconscious. Yeah.
So it's gone from instinctual to more of a, is it like a chakra kind of thing?
It's gone more to the head chakra. Mm-hmm. But it is about thinking.
Well, she's aware she hides it too.
Well, she hides it, but it also has to do with death, so it has to do with killing. It's thinking which can have a destructive killing effect, if you like, or
well, it's no longer useful.
Well, it's not.
Except as dead material.
Or perhaps as a stimulus for the next stage of development. It's not, it can be destructive, maybe that's what you're saying.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
It can be destructive thinking. And it's unconscious thinking.
It's not entirely clear to me if she relates the penis with the skull. Is it the same thing?
Well, it's not the same thing, but it's her second companion. First she has a penis as a companion. Then that is taken away from her. And then she gets pissed off at her parents and she goes out into the wilderness. And she finds a skull,
okay,
and brings that to her bed as her companion, her male companion.
So it's not, I was thinking, probably it's another part of this unconscious relationship. You know, initially, she was related to the penis, and then she's related to other part of that unconscious represented by a skull, but it's not the same, it's two different things, two different individuals. Or
different
forces.
Different paths.
It could be a metaphor. The metaphor is like marriage, you know, just penis first, but then what he's thinking. So that's kind of her journey from conscious to unconsciousness, penis first, but then as she becomes more evolved, more other things become.
That's interesting. No way to put marriage.
It's funny because Annie knows a lot more than. About astrology than I do, and I talk about it a lot more. But Mercury is a symbol for cognitive thought, and it's like Mercury in Pisces or Mercury in the 12th house, where you have this cognitive,
mm-hmm.
but it's kind of not in the element where it eventually perhaps should be. It's not brought up to
thinking. When we get into an argument, we get angry. Then we say things in anger. That have thoughts, but they come out of our unconscious. You know, it's thinking. We don't just growl when we're angry. We also say things, and we can say very hurtful things sometimes, mm-hmm. because what we say is guided by the unconscious intellect. You know, you can think of the meanest thing in the world to say that it's really cutting, if you're really angry, and there's a lot of thought behind it, but it's unconscious thought. And it can be very destructive. Yeah.
Unconscious or emotional?
Well, unconscious in the sense that it jumps out of your mouth before you even are meant to say it.
Yeah. Okay.
You know? It after you've said it, you think, oh my God, did I really say that? That was horrible. But you've said it. It's too late.
Can I just say something real quick that happened today that was actually, it was sort of amazing. I was on the bus and plugged my cell phone and I saw this guy out the corner of my eye. He was sitting down. The woman was coming. So he got out of the seat to give her the seat and she started yelling at him, like, you're blocking my way. How dare you? I'm going to go around, really laced into him. And he was trying to do a good deed. So I said to him, like, no good deed goes unpunished. And he said, well, really, I was wrong. Her perspective, she thinks I got in the way, so I'm going to apologize to her. But you know, I would have snapped at her. But he said, reached over and said, I'm very sorry, I got in your way, please accept my apologies. And he said to me that it might not make her feel better now, but she might feel better later. And I said, you know, what are you, a social worker? He said, no, I'm a cop from Chicago. And I said, wow, don't you just punch? He said, no, that's old school. Nowadays, you don't do that. So I said, what about your ego? And he said, don't you think with 27 years on the police force, I've seen a lot worse? So it was just so interesting.
Impressive.
To talk about, like, my thought process would have been kind of viscerally, go away or whatever. But was an example to me of someone whose cognitive thought process was under control.
He was very conscious of his use of his behavior.
Yeah,
yes.
A comment about that, since I'm around them all the time. That's so true. The frontline emergency psychiatric services in New York City is the NYPD. More often than not, I mean, it's a blanket statement, but more often than not, they're just superb natural psychologists. And our image of them is basically they're there with guns and whatnot, but actually their primary purpose is just this, to sort of calm violence down and diffuse things. As I said, like the frontline emergency psychiatric service in New York City is the police department.
Wow. So,
just want to ask, I'm unclear, so now the skull is actually a good or bad symbol or both? Because I mean, I'm thinking about how, you know, in society itself, sometimes you have images that come up and they're like a collective consciousness kind of thing. And now I see people wearing kind of almost worshiping skulls. They're on everything. T-shirts and so so I'm wondering,
it's very conscious.
What does that mean? Because we've come to the point where maybe we lack excitement or there's nothing else to explore except death or skull. I mean, what?
Well, I don't think you could say that the skull is either a good or a bad symbol in this story.
Right.
It's a story. It's an image of phallic power, which is not yet integrated into full life.
In this story,
it's an image of phallic of the phallic, the head phallus. You have the body phallus, which is the penis. Then you have the head phallus, which is phallic discrimination in the mind. But it's an image of that aspect of it which is not yet integrated into full human consciousness. So it's neither good nor bad, but it does in its unconscious form, it does have a destructive tendency. So in that sense, you could say maybe the skull is an image of phallic power, which can be quite destructive if it is not more further integrated.
That's a good explanation.
So why an image of death is so popular in our culture right now? I don't know. That's a big question. But I don't think it.
It's not really.
Yeah.
But I thought there's an overall symbol to the skull.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think it represents some. There's an element of destructiveness if it stays in this form.
Can we ask you
about what?
Why you got a skull on?
Yeah.
Well, if you want to know, I can't tell you too much depth, but it has a lot of personal meaning. I had a very transformational experience on, I won't
I won't tell you the year, but November 1st and 2nd, which in the Catholic and Christian Church is All Saints, All Souls Day, which is communication with the dead. And my life started over at this time, and so I wear this in, I get a new one every year on November 1st. But don't ask me more than that.
That's very interesting.
That's the day when the veils are thinnest, when the Celtic tradition where you cross over.
And thank you so much. It's so rich because it's about transformation.
Mm-hmm.
So
definitely.
It's about the skull. Death is about transformation. When you dream of death, it's usually not about death. When you dream of death, it's usually about transforming to a new stage. So that's an interesting thing about the skull.
Yeah. In Hindu theology, they have Kali with her necklace of skulls. She's Shiva's consort, just like cutting off.
So where do you find a new skull every year? Do you have to
they're,
look for
well,
them?
Because they're so prevalent, like Barbara said, they're not that hard.
Fun.
They've gotten smaller. I found a very small one this year.
Okay.
Cool.
For whatever that's worth. You can
I'm
tell me.
But in the tarot, the death, the part of the death, is, you know, also remains and a new beginning. Not death in our traditional sense, it's death. Just
it's the end and the beginning.
Transformation.
Great. Yeah, transformation. Yeah.
Scorpio.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's ruled by Scorpio.
Now the parents are pissed off about the skull too. They weren't happy about the penis, and they're not happy about the skull either.
Very controlling parents. These are what are called helicopter parents.
They get in their canoe and they sail off. The hell with this, we're not having any part. So what does that represent? What's going on there? Why are the parents, what's the symbolic meaning of that?
I didn't see it negatively. I saw it positively in both.
But they're angry, and they're not going to tolerate this. I'm not saying that it's necessarily a negative thing in the story, but why are they so indignant?
Not only that, they're going to abandon.
And why? What's that? Psychologically, what does that say?
Why are people so pissed off about what's the thing down in Wall Street where the people are
protesting?
Yeah, why are some people so pissed off by that? Right. Same question.
Okay. Yeah. So what are we talking about?
Challenging to the convention.
Yeah, convention.
Okay, it's a challenge to the convention, and then the convention fights back.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's the tension between individuation and conventional
thinking.
The parents standing for the way things are supposed to be, in their opinion, the traditions. So individuation is inherently opposed to convention.
Right. So the Saturn Uranus.
Uranus Pluto square for the next 3 years. That'll make us all be conscious.
I don't know much.
So a little in talk here. What is this?
There's a configuration. The 1960s. There was the planet of transformation and the planet of change were joined. So we had the civil rights movement, the women's movement, and the gay movement. And those two planets only join every only have a conversation every 50, 60 years. So starting in June, they're going to have 7 conversations, and it's the struggle between the Tea Party, you know, as it's currently showing up in the culture, it's the Tea Party people versus the Occupy Wall Street people. When we had an earlier conversation, the cultural story was Jay Leno and Conan O'Brien, Saturn, Uranus, you know, the young thing taking over the old guy's job, and the young guy got castrated and sent to a smaller network. This is a conversation between Grandpa Uranus, who's the sky god, and Pluto, who's his grandchild. So there's no popular mythology for that, the grandchild, grandfather story. But there was one a while back, Whale Rider, which was a Maori tale, which is actually a really interesting because it was the granddaughter with the grandfather. But it was the story of the grandfather saying the son should rule, but there was no son, and when she was born, her brother and her mother died. So she was the girl child, and she was like, I am the king, I am the leader, and he was like, no, you're not. So there was this struggle that went on between them as she sought to assert herself, to individuate and become the leader, and he had to agree that girls could lead. So it's a very interesting dynamic. We're going to have it in our culture, starting in June for 5 years, 4 years. So traditionally when it's happened, you know, last time it happened was the French Revolution. So we're kind of hoping it won't show up that way. But it is a revolutionary energy. It wants us all, and everybody's going to have it somewhere in their chart, especially the babies born in the 60s. They're going to really wake up. But it's an individuating aspect, because Uranus is the planet of consciousness, and Pluto is the planet of convention and holding and not agreeing to change. So the contrast between no reproductive rights versus a bunch of women standing there going like this, looking at them, we're going to see a lot more of that. And the current objects are the Pluto with Uranus. So now the Pluto will be meaner, because he was he's going to be mean in June, and then the Occupy Wall Street people will be crazy in September, if that's the way it shows out.
Okay.
So it's very interesting, because it'll show up in the greater collective, and it'll show up in your chart somewhere, where there's a struggle to become what you're supposed to be and own your power in the face of violating whatever you were conventionally told would kill you.
Okay.
So it's a huge, huge cultural caca, essentially. So all the astrologers are a little nervous about it, because last time, and you know, Pluto, of course, when he was discovered, the last time we did not have nuclear weapons. So a lot of people are going nuclear too, that it'll have a nuclear component. So the whole Iran-Israel thing is a little scary also on top of it. But collectively,
build my bomb shelter.
Build your bomb shelter, right? Move to Iowa, you know. but yeah, it's an energy that we've already been experiencing it really since the summer of 2010, and really the beginning of January 2008 with the collapse of the banking industry. That's what started it, because there is no apparent consequences for that. So that makes the people that are going, what do I have to lose? You guys have everything. It's a very dark energy. But in your own chart, it's psychologically evolving.
Okay.
So that's why we take classes here.
It can be about transformation.
Totally about personal transformation. But it's people are going to really feel like, I always followed the rules and I didn't get anything. So now what? And it's about, well, why are you following the rules? Are they rules you believe in? Or are you following your own rules, your own path?
Yeah, on the positive side, Gandhi and Mussolini had almost the same chart, and they used the energies in very different ways.
Yeah, I just want to finish with the story.
Yeah.
I want to come back to the story. The woman then builds a fire, and then, under the instruction of the skull, throws it in the fire. So again, we have this major transformation, right? Another round of transformation. And she's instructed that if you do that, things will be better for you. And she does so, and then, lo and behold, a caravan comes clattering up with a handsome man wearing the best of skin. So a very well equipped man.
Interesting is that, as a parallel to the other story, that this woman was holding the iron burning. She was told not to do anything about this, and in this story she was told, when she sets the skull into the fire, not to do anything, just remain quiet and wait.
That's right, but it takes a lot of discipline, either to hold and do nothing, or
and in this particular,
not look.
No matter what you hear, don't do anything, wait. Patience.
And she does all that, and the result is that she gets this wonderful husband who's wealthy and successful, and you know, and as you said, they live happily ever after. At least it looks very promising. One of the things we can ask is, why does this story turn out so well? And then she kills off the parents. When they come back and try and mooch off her, she says, fuck you.
Before you.
Kills her with bone marrow. Bone marrow splinters.
She doesn't take prisoners, this girl.
Sounds kind of unpleasant.
But why does its story turn out so well for her? What is it about this girl that she's so successful?
Well, she followed her own path, and then she had the discipline to let it go and just witness it.
Okay. Well, okay, but what else? Let's think about her quality. What kind of girl is this? What is she?
Resilient.
Resilient?
Determined.
Determined, yeah.
Patient.
She's also extremely active, actually. Most of the time she takes action.
She's kind of pleasure-seeking.
She goes after what she wants. Uh-huh. I mean, there's a time when she's instructed to sit quietly, and she's willing to do that when she's clearly instructed. But most of the time, she's taking the initiative. She goes after the penis in the lake. She goes after the skull. She fights her parents and runs back to them and says, no, 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 and grabs hold of the paddle and says, you can't leave me, I'm coming with you, don't do that. So she engages and fights for all the way through. She's active. She plays a very active role. And then she builds a fire and then follows directions. When directions are given, she follows them. So I think it's the idea that for this journey to be successful requires that the feminine ego really struggle and really work. It's not just a matter of sitting there.
If you were to read this, I read something once that there are only two positions in life, which is passivity or activity. Here's the active person, both of them.
Yeah, and again, it's the idea of the serpent, to be honest. The serpent. The serpent insists you have to tell your story.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be active for this to work. And pretty Mady Branca insists on doing it her way.
Conviction, right? This is conviction.
And I'm contrasting it a little bit, although you may not have seen the story, but there's another story on my website, a parallel Eskimo story. About a woman who finds a skull. Oh, it's the woman who became a spider. But if you compare the two stories, that it's a parallel story. Again, it's a woman who takes a skull to her bed and plays with it, and the parents get pissed off. But the difference, if you look at the difference, this woman is very engaged, very emotionally engaged, very passionate, very active. She has lots of emotional reactions, and she takes action on her feelings. Whereas in the woman who became a spider, the woman is not very engaged. She doesn't take action. She kind of drifts through the story without fighting very much and without having very much emotional reactions. And that story doesn't end well for her.
When I first read this, I mean, my instantaneous reaction was that this was a story of the penis as consciousness. And consciousness emerging from the, not the great mother, but the great unconscious of the universe, consciousness arising out of that, and eventually triumphing. So I saw the penis as symbolic of consciousness.
But you see, I think the story, if you look at the way the story unfolds, it's much more about the fate of this feminine figure. It's about what happens to her.
See, I saw it above those categories, sort of a symbolic message for man.
But see, I think you're thinking top down. You're imposing some theory on the story. If you stay with the image, it's much more about this woman developing a successful, fertile relationship with the masculine. Consciousness obviously is implied in there at some level, but it's much more about the marriage. She works towards the marriage, and the reward is this wonderful husband who arrives. You know, so the focus is on the woman's experience.
So maybe I've been married too long.
Well, I think you're being theoretical. I think you're approaching the method from a more theoretical approach. I think if you stay with the imagery, you know, it's more about women's evolution.
Okay.
Of the evolution of the feminine, let's say.
That's what makes it a difficult discipline, I find, in reading these stories and even the dreams, to suspend knowledge. Maybe bring it in later, but see what's there. And I mean, you've spoken about it, but to see what's there without imposing a lot of stuff on it until some other meaning emerges. It's very hard, I find, to do that. It takes a long time.
And I think it's about relaxing the ego a little bit, mm-hmm. relaxing the intellect and the ego, and being more in dialogue with the unconscious, because the story is coming from the unconscious, and it has a lot to say. So we have to kind of try to listen. The struggle is to listen. Mm-hmm.
This is the end of part 3. Thank you for listening.